Hello, welcome to the first episode of the Hope Rehab Mindful Compassion Show. My name's Paul Garrigan and I'm a mindfulness coach here at Hope.
I'm Jordan Leaf. I was a client here at Hope and now a support worker.
For this first episode, I thought we would talk about the importance of kindness in recovery and sort of developing a kind attitude towards ourselves. What does that mean to you, Jordan?
Coming in, I suppose I was really at a low point in terms of where or what I thought of myself. I'd been beating myself up, I guess, for the last 10 years at my repeated insanity and the continuous kind of mistakes that I was making and not being able to conquer, you know, my lack of control over alcohol and my addiction. So one of the biggest things I've learned here and through mindfulness and the program itself is to start having compassion for my mistakes and understanding that there's certain things that go on that I'm not responsible for and I can't control, but using tools I can learn to control myself and realize that I am going to make mistakes, but it's how I deal with that and understanding that that's okay because it's normal and it's human.
So before you sort of came here, would you have sort of said that you suffer self-hatred or self-loathing?
Yeah, absolutely.
And were you aware of it?
I wasn't. I suppose I didn't give myself a break at all. It was just you idiot straight away almost to that point, not sort of thinking there could be other reasons or, just not giving myself a break. I had no comprehension that that I can actually get results or better results with kindness towards myself as opposed to just hating myself for what I was doing.
And that's it, isn't it? Because we don't realize, we sort of think, I remember thinking that I'm being hard on myself, but it's sort of doing me some good. That I'm like I'm motivating myself. That if I'm too kind to myself, I'll become an even worse person.
Yeah.
Did you sort of feel that way?
Definitely. It was that sort of feeling that if you were too kind to yourself, you're only going to get worse. And not realizing that the beat up on yourself was leading you further into addiction and further into that low place. It's a bit like, I suppose, if you're trying to train a dog and it does something wrong, you're not going to beat it and beat it and beat it and expect any healthy result. You know?
Exactly, it just becomes a beaten down dog.
Exactly. Yes, I suppose realizing the kindness gives yourself a little bit of breathing space to actually start to work on yourself, I suppose, if that makes sense.
Yeah. What do you think? So this idea, one of the ideas we talk about in the program is that we sort of say even before the addiction, so a lot of the self-hatred occurs, you know, during the addiction. But I think for most of us, it was even there beforehand. And we talk about this idea about being uncomfortable in our own skin. Did that resonate with you, this idea of being uncomfortable in your own skin, even before you start drinking?
Yeah, definitely. I would never say there's been a point in my life where I've been comfortable looking in a mirror or, thinking that I'm a good person and that things that I do actually do benefit other people. There's always been an element of shame and guilt in who I was, and that's kind of always been underlying in my life. Then when I started to get worse in my addiction, that got worse and worse to the point where if I got in an elevator and there was mirrors all around, I'd just stare at the floor. Like, I just could not look at myself because I was...
Did you feel initially that the drinking helped?
The drinking kind of took my mind away from it.
Yeah.
Allowed me to escape. Gave me that confidence, a false sense of confidence that, you know, I'm right and everyone else is the problem. So that's kind of would allow my head in a way to stop hating on me, and give me that confidence to go and, you know, do the things and say the things that I, you know, I thought I was self-righteously needing to say.
So what do you think, like, you know, one of the things we talked about is the origin of this not liking ourselves, this self-hatred. And I don't know if you remember, but we mentioned, you know, that Vancouver physician, Gabor Maté, I think, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, but he wrote that book, In the Realm of the Hungry Ghosts. And his ideas are very, very similar to Buddhism. And this idea that, like, as children, we sort of start to become really inauthentic. It's like, you know, we have these two needs. We have one need to be authentic and another need to sort of fit in, like, and to be accepted by other people. And that we end up compromising our authenticity to fit in with other people. I mean, we're start living more and more in our heads. And it means that for some of us, by the time we're, say, 14 or 15, we completely hate ourselves because we're not ourselves. Does that make any sense to you?
Oh, completely, completely. And I think one of the things that, you know, especially my mum used to always says to me is, you know, when you were young, you used to walk to the beat of your own drum. And as I got older, I stopped doing that. And, you know, I got to the point where I came here and I just didn't even know who I was. You know, I grew up in a small country town. And being gay, I was always different to everyone else, even from a very young age. And obviously, I then spent, you know, my adolescence trying to fit in, trying to, you know.
You must have had a huge reason to hide, and you must have felt you had a huge reason
absolutely.
To hide.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely. So that, and I am an authentic person, you know, and I do need to say what I need to say, and I do need to get my needs met, and I'm learning that now. But I spent a lot of time, you know, just living behind masks and biting my tongue and pretending to like things that I didn't like, to fit in and all of that sort of stuff. And you have moments where you drop that a little bit. Like I remember going when I first got to uni and met other sort of intellectual people, that you suddenly have those moments of like, oh, this is wonderful because there's people like me and there's people I fit in with, because I could express myself in certain areas better, with those particular people. And those transitional periods where you get a bit of a taste of it again, but then when you're out of, or you're just used to the practice, you do start changing it back again.
And did you think, like, so at university that you were sort of putting on, you had to put on a new identity, that it still was, even though you're able to be open about certain things, that it still really wasn't, you couldn't really be yourself, like, totally.
One thing, yeah.
And really, probably because by that point we don't even know who we are.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that was an issue with me with being gay. When I finally did come out, I then had to be a certain person to fit into the gay world, which wasn't me either. So you take one mask off, but you have to then put another one on. And when you're not in touch with yourself, I don't think you even know where you're pretending and where you're not pretending anymore. And that's where the problem was for me. I had no barometer and no gauge of where I really should have been.
So, you know, just going back to the actual sort of content of the self-hatred itself. So we can sort of think, oh, you know, I'm being motivational, I'm trying to motivate myself by saying this stuff. But when we think about it, where do you think these words have come from? Like, where have these criticisms come from? Are these things that we've thought of ourselves, or are these things we've heard from other people?
I think it's a combination. For me, I think when you're very, you know, when you're kind of intelligent and self-aware, you're hypercritical of others and yourself, especially yourself.
But is that something we were born with, or is it something we learn, do you think?
I don't know. I suppose it's something you can be born with. And then I think there's a nurture part that comes in if you've got particularly critical parents, or, you know, my mum's hypercritical, so I'm sure I've learned behaviours and have expectations built because of that. But I think I would have always been a hypercritical person regardless of what happened. And part of what I've been learning through mindfulness is the less judgmental I am of myself, the less judgmental I'm becoming of others.
Exactly, yeah.
I think that comes out of the compassion as well, is, you know, see someone, the spot it, you've got it thing, you see something in someone else and it irritates you straight away. But if you, if that doesn't bother you so much in yourself anymore, doesn't really bother you in others either.
So you just mentioned sort of compassion there. So we, like in the whole program, we tend to use the words kindness and compassion in a very specific way. What do those two words mean to you now? So what does kindness mean to you now?
Yeah, kindness is sort of the acts and the things that you do for others. To me, on a daily basis. Yeah, it's kind of in your treatment of others. It's not necessarily a mental position. It's more just doing nice things.
That desire to sort of, the way I look at it, so the kindness is like an attitude we have towards ourselves or to others. And I would sort of say it's an open attitude that we have to ourselves and others.
Yeah.
And how does that differ from compassion?
I suppose compassion to me now is that ability to be with people's emotional states no matter what.
Brilliant, yeah.
Just being able to see pain in people and wanting to be there for them, you know, and not being afraid of that anymore. To me, I couldn't sit and watch people cry. I couldn't, you know, anyone in any pain would turn me into an emotional wreck because I couldn't deal with it.
And even when you're being kind, so you might feel you're being very kind. You can be very kind to others, but it can be completely lacking in compassion.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely.
I like this thing, here's $20. Just don't tell me about your problems.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's almost like, oh, here, there, and that's as far as I could go, was to pat someone on the back and okay, can you stop this now because it's making you feel really uncomfortable.
And you notice the things that you say that in those situations. The things you sort of that we want to say to these other people, or that we do say, are the exact same message we're saying to ourselves.
Yeah.
So it's like when we're in pain, we just don't want to confront. We go, you know, we start with, you know, you'll be fine, you'll be fine.
Yeah, definitely.
We just don't want to deal with it, and it's a very great reflection, isn't it?
Absolutely. That need, if I saw someone in pain, I had to solve it. You know, I'd have to give them advice, and I'd have to be. Because watching them was horrible, because it would be, for me, what if I have to deal with that? What if I have to deal with my pain? Whereas now I'm a lot more comfortable I understand that, you know, these are emotions and these are feelings that people have to confront and have to get through. And it's not a scary, horrible thing. It's life, and it is part of living. Mm-hmm. It's what we have to kind of deal with.
So what do you think of this idea then? So the whole idea of the mindfulness program here, that kindness and compassion are skills that we can develop.
Oh, definitely.
And how do we develop them?
We develop them through the meditation practices. I think they're like a muscle. You know, you've got to keep working them, working them in real life. I think I find for me, sharing them helps, talking about what I do to others here that are sort of still learning, right at the beginning, sharing that. I think sitting with them and confronting a lot of their pain as well, and realizing that, you know, compassion is being able to accept that pain and deal with it and grow from it, you know. That's sort of where I'm.
I mean, one way, you know, we sort of think, so with the developing sort of the kindness is like we have to have the kind that before we can even get on to compassion, we need that kind attitude towards ourselves and the kind attitude towards other people. It's like that willingness. It's basically the willingness to open up ourselves to the world. And the way we develop that is through the loving kindness meditation, the metta meditation.
Yeah.
Now the metta meditation, so that definitely allows us to develop the kindness. And it can also help us develop a little compassion as well. And we have specific practices later on for developing a more focus towards compassion. But I think, yeah, the first step is to develop that kind attitude. Because it's like we can't get very far with compassion until we have that.
No. And that's, I suppose, empathy as well. You know, it falls into the same category as empathy and understanding that, you know, people aren't actually that different to you, and the things that they're going through are things that you've been through or, you know, could have to face. So understanding that and the meditation, I find, just opens me up to accepting accepting that within myself as well as helping me to accept it in others.
And how far can what are the ultimate benefits of this? Like, what do you think it can lead to? I mean, okay, you're seeing some benefit from it, you feel more open.
Yeah.
But, you know, how far can we go with this, with kindness? I mean, what sort of impact can it have on our future, being kinder and kinder and kinder? Will it make us sort of very vulnerable to people that can take advantage of us? Or?
No, I find the opposite happens for me. Is the more kindness I have and the more compassion I'm having for people, the better equipped I am to deal with stressful situations. And we've had some fairly tough and emotional situations here. And I've sort of always viewed compassion and kindness as, you express it through raw emotion and through the craziness of passion, almost, I suppose, is the word that I would use. If someone dies, if you're not brought to the edge almost, you really didn't love them and you really didn't care for them. But I'm sort of seeing now that the opposite is true. When you can more correctly identify and understand your emotions inside and have that true compassion, you're almost left better equipped and better able to cope with stressful situations and and deal with all of your emotions generally. That's sort of how I have found it to benefit.
It makes a lot of sense. And we talk about here about, you know, when we come to rehab, that we're really high maintenance people, and that the reason we're high maintenance people is we're incapable of dealing with our stuff. And it's trying to avoid our stuff that makes us high maintenance. But through this process of working with, like, developing a kinder attitude and being willing to face our stuff, like through compassion, that eventually we become low maintenance people. And low maintenance people means we can actually start to enjoy our lives and really, you know, open up more and more to the world.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose it's that idea of, spoiled brat-ism that was, you know, always in us, and especially in me, it's a big sense of entitlement. And that becomes less important when you start focusing on others and within yourself. When you're a lot kinder to yourself and a lot more compassionate to yourself, your expectations of yourself I wouldn't say lower, because you actually have higher expectations of yourself in different ways, but certainly in materialism and life not going exactly the way you want becomes less concerning. It's more just, you know, like you always say, these are tests.
And life doesn't have to go the way you want for it to be good, does it?
No, absolutely not.
And it's usually the opposite, isn't it? Because the thing, you know, so I sort of look back. If life had it turned out how I wanted it to, it'd be impoverished. It would be nowhere near as good as what it is. Nowhere near.
Exactly. And what I've sort of started to realise, and I can see a a lot in others is that, you know, we spend so much energy and stress in unnecessary ways because we haven't got, because we think in our heads we haven't got what we wanted. And really, maybe we have got, or maybe we've got what we need. No.
There's a Rolling Stones song called that, isn't
it? Exactly. I'm not going to sing it. So it's just accepting that, you know, that path is there perhaps, and trying to fight against it is really only going to cause you more stress and put you back in that place where you do really want to use.
So say if there's someone listening to this and they're, you know, still sort of, you know, in addiction and you know, they're trying to make sense of what we're saying. What would you say to that person? What do they need to do? To, you know, how could this help them? How could this developing a kind attitude help them? And how? What were the practical steps they could take?
I suppose the first thing is obviously to admit that you have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the second part of that is to surrender to that idea that, you know, you don't have all the answers, and you don't have to have all the answers. There are ways to find help, I guess, to get help. For me, that has come through the program here at Hope, plus the mindfulness and all of that sort of stuff together. Has put me in a much better frame of mind than when I came in. I think the most important thing is, yeah, just realizing that you're struggling to maintain a way of life. It's not benefiting you, and not bringing out the best in you in any way. And that's what addiction is.
It's hard to let go of, isn't it?
It's very hard to let go of. It's very scary to open yourself up to an unknown space when, you know.
And did you find it hard to start being kind to start being kind to yourself? Did you sort of feel like it was almost like a taboo, or you were
incredibly there's almost, especially in the Australian culture, you know, that idea of loving yourself has such terrible connotations. Loving yourself is such a bad thing. So you've got that double edge.
People understand that you love yourself, so you stop being selfish. It's the fact that we don't love ourselves that makes us so self-obsessed and selfish, yeah.
Exactly. And so it's kind of breaking that belief that, you know, loving yourself is a conceited thing. And so we spend so much time trying to bring ourselves down.